Hello there again. Welcome to Blind Like Me and Phil Parsh here, and along with Ann Harrison, who's somewhere in Georgia. What town did you say you were in?
Canton,
Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that close to anything we would know?
It's kind of close to Marietta. It's north, kind of northwest of Marietta.
What size town is this, Canton?
I'm not sure about the exact actual size, but it's...
I mean, small town, 20,000, 25,000, 10,000?
It's not a real small town, but it's not like as big as Atlanta or Marietta.
Oh, nothing's as big as Atlanta, my God.
Hey, the only thing I know of as big as Atlanta, or probably bigger than Atlanta, is New York.
Well, of course, Houston is right up there, and Dallas-Fort Worth.
I've never been out in that area.
Never been to Texas?
Nope.
Never been to Texas. Well, I've never been to Georgia, so...
Oh, wow.
I guess we're...
Interesting.
I guess we're on equal footing. How did you get to Canton, Georgia? Were you born there? Or?
No. I was actually born in a little bitty town. Well, I was born in Cordell, Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And I grew up in a little town called Rochelle.
Uh-huh.
The way I got to Canton, see, my husband, I got married about, well, it'd be 3 years ago to the day. To the day, September 21st.
You got married 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? And you're still married, I suppose.
Oh, yeah.
Well, good. And so you've been a little Georgia peach all your life, haven't you,
oh,
honey?
Yeah.
Well, you don't seem to have that accent that most of those Georgia girls have, you know?
Sometimes I do. Like, if I get around a lot of people
yeah.
who talk like that.
Yeah.
Then
you start talking like
oh,
that,
oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. But then when I get around other people, it's like, see, I've lived in Atlanta for... I've lived in the Atlanta area for about since 99, so...
Yeah. What level of vision? You have any vision at all?
I have light perception, and I can see shadows, but I can't tell what they are.
You can't tell what they are, but you know there's something there, but you know what it is.
Exactly.
Well, all right, let's see. Now, you say that you, when you were a little child, you were ready to send you to school. Let's go through your schooling. They send you to Georgia School for the Blind, or what?
Yep. The Georgia Academy for the Blind.
Georgia Academy for the Blind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sounds a little better than just the Georgia School for the Blind, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Georgia Academy. Good school, bad school, a good experience? Tell us.
So. It was, well, there were, you know, you have good and bad in all schools.
Sure.
But really and truly, it was like your typical residential school for the blind.
Yeah.
With typical rules and curfews and stuff. In some cases, I don't know if anybody does, but I really didn't like school all that much.
Really?
I don't know if anybody else, I don't know if, I mean, there are some people who do, but I don't know who really truly likes it.
There are people who like it. I've run across people who enjoy going to school. I think my wife is one. She excelled at school. She enjoyed it. She didn't like all the rules and everything, but I think she enjoyed...
Oh. I didn't like all the rules either.
Yeah, well, of course, they take you away from your home. You didn't get to go. Did you get to go home on weekends?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah.
You're a weekend student.
Yep. I was not a day student, though, because I lived too far.
But they took you home on weekends and, of course,
Easter
and all those things.
Oh, yeah, my mother came to pick me up.
Learn Braille. You a good Braille reader?
Oh, yes.
Are you now?
Oh, yes. I love to read Braille, but it takes up so much room.
It does, doesn't it?
Yes. It takes up too much room.
You look at a Braille dictionary. I can remember as a little kid looking at my brother's. I had a blind brother, and he had his Braille Bible, and it was huge.
I've got one that it's still at my parents' house, but I've got one, but some of the volumes are missing.
It took up an entire bookshelf, and I remember seeing my mother's Bible and thinking, well, there's something wrong here. What's the deal? And
The print books are smaller.
The deal is Braille takes up a whole lot of room. But you read your preferred method of reading a magazine is like Reader's Digest or some magazine. Would you read that in Braille, or would you listen to that in speech?
Well, I prefer to read it in Braille, but because of space limitations, I have listened to it on cassette.
Yeah.
I prefer it in Braille, but I don't have the space for it.
You'd really prefer it in Braille.
Mm-hmm.
Well, good. Braille is a useful thing. They need to keep teaching Braille. So many blind people who thrive on Braille. So you didn't like school, yet you at some point in time decided you wanted to be a writer.
Yeah, well, actually, the thing I liked about school, the one thing that I love to read.
Uh-huh.
So that was, I guess you'd say that was my favorite subject. Even though some of the things might have been a little dull, but that was my favorite subject. And I wrote a lot of, because of course in school you have to write a lot of stories and essays and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I wish I still had some, not the essays, but because I don't particularly care for essay writing, but I wish I still had some of the short stories that I did for creative writings and other things that we had to do.
So you didn't keep any of those?
I had to turn them in.
You turned them in. Now, when you were educated, we didn't have computers.
They did have the Apple computers.
They did?
Yes.
And had some speech, didn't they?
Yep. The Echo. Echo Talk. Echo. I don't remember what it was back then, but they had this word processor called Word Talk.
And it talked to you?
Yes.
It would read a Word document to you?
It was not exactly like Word today.
Yeah.
You had these 5.25-inch floppy disks, and you had to boot the computer up with the disk.
Whoa, I remember that.
Your disk drives and your keyboard and your monitor. That was your computer.
I remember booting the computer with, but in fact, I've got a little unit that as a cassette player, and it has a serial port cable on it. And they booted the computer with a cassette at one time. And if you stored any information, you stored it on a cassette. That was before.
And you stored it on the floppy disk.
Before we had the hard drives, and then we got floppy mm-hmm. disks. So you these essays were done that you did in Braille at school?
Yeah, a lot of times I did a lot of stuff in Braille, but then when I was like in high school, I started doing, like, when I would go to public school English classes, if I was taking a computer class, I would type the stuff into the Word Talk format. Sometimes I'd save it, sometimes I wouldn't. I'd have to edit it, but I would type it and then print it out.
Yeah, and that made my things much easier because you could edit. Editing with Braille is impossible. If you start screwing up, you just have to start that sheet over.
Now if you do a couple things, I've known to scratch a dot out here and there, but as long as I'm the only one reading it, that's fine. But if somebody else has to read it,
that makes a difference, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What'd you do in high school? What'd you think of high school? Did you play an instrument?
It was okay, but I wasn't a big history buff. I liked the English literature and stuff like that. Like I said, essays was not my thing, but of course you have to do it on an O's.
Sure.
But I was the English lit. Except for when we got into truly English lit, such as Beowulf and the Shakespeare plays.
Now,
those kind of things, if you've got to dig for it or you can't understand it, I'm like, once I finally figured out what some of the stuff meant, I understood it and liked it. But there was a lot of times I was like, there's no way I'm going to figure out, because it was written in the old English.
Yeah.
I was like, no, how are you supposed to understand this?
So as long as you didn't have to work too hard for it, you liked it.
as long as I could understand it right off,
okay.
It was fine. I mean, I wonder if a lot of people are like that. If they've got to dig to try to understand it, it's like, and then you dig and you think you got it. You start trying to work with it. You think you understand it, and then you realize it's not what you thought it was. You're like, well,
I think. Okay. I think a lot of people are like that. If it takes too much effort, you just don't do it. So, did they have a band there? Did you play musical instrument or sing?
I didn't play in the band. I taught, not taught. I learned some piano when I was, like, in middle school.
Uh-huh.
And then I started learning the guitar, and I think my granddaddy bought me a tape so I could learn the guitar, but you had to see that you had these little stickers you put on the guitar, and you had to read the book along with the cassette, and that's... that didn't work.
So you gave up on the guitar?
Yes.
I tell you this, to play guitar, you have to want to. You have to really, really want to, because it's not an easy thing to learn. I mean,
no, I wanted to at the time, but then when I got, you know, I had the guitar tape, and it said read this, or look at the, it would show you the chords instead of tell you how to put your fingers. You had to actually look at the stickers and stuff. If you get something where you have to see it, then it's like, uh-uh. There's no way I can do this.
Well, you know, there are lots of guitar courses now for blind people that tell you exactly what to do. So if you wanted to take that up again as a hobby, I think you could. But this was a videotape.
No, it was an audio tape with a print book.
Okay. And you...
And printed stickers. We called the Library for the Blind because I thought about taking it up again. My husband's trying to teach himself how to play.
Well, there are lots of... I haven't interviewed anybody, but I've read about... In magazines like Newsreel or maybe Dialogue or something like that, I've read about two or three people who have guitar courses that are designed especially for blind people. So if you wanted to do that again, you wanted to suffer through getting calluses on your fingers so that you could play, if you wanted to go through that again, I think you could do it. I booked a little job next weekend, and so I'm having to go practice and get my calluses back. I spent yesterday afternoon about 2 hours playing guitar, and I don't play well, but I play. And of course, I don't play every day, so I want to get some calluses back on my fingers so I can play this 4-hour job next week without being too uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It just takes time. Okay, when did you let me mention that one of the reasons we are interviewing Ann is she has a book that is out in print now, published by whom?
Author House.
Author House.
Yes.
Which is a standalone publisher.
It's a print on demand publisher out in Bloomington, Indiana.
Print on demand publisher, but one of the reasons we're interviewing here is we want to talk about her book. But now, what you got out? We're going to do that in a few minutes. So y'all hang on. College. What did you decide to do when you got out of high school?
Well, I didn't really go to college. I graduated in '95. I didn't go to college. I went through several different training, a few different training programs through the vocational rehab, which that's a different story in itself.
Well, tell us. That's what we're here for. Stories. That's why we're here, Ann.
Some of the independent living training, but I really wasn't through, like, Warm Springs Institute. And then I went through the Sensory Center, they were with the state back when I started in 96. I went through Warm Springs from August of 95 through April of 96. That's when I graduated there.
Now what is Warm Springs? Tell us what...
Warm Springs Roosevelt Institute of Rehabilitation. Roosevelt. It was the actual institute that Theodore Roosevelt designed so that people with disabilities could get the training they need to live independently and get jobs and things like that.
No, but this had multiple disabilities. There were people there with it. It isn't just for blind people.
No.
They were teaching you basic household skills, like how to cook a hamburger or
how to cook a hamburger, stuff like that. But I still... VR would say that I got the training, but not really. I didn't have enough of the time that I needed to get the training.
But you didn't learn any of those skills at home? Your parents didn't teach you any of those?
No.
How to sweep a floor, how to cook a hamburger, how to fry an egg?
No, I was pushed through. Not only that, I was pushed through the program. See, I was at school at the academy. Yeah, I got out for the summer, but I really didn't learn a whole lot of cooking and stuff.
Yeah. Do you have brothers and sisters or
I
not?
I have two brothers.
You have two brothers.
Yep.
So these people were just trying to teach you basic how to sweep a floor.
How to sweep a floor, how to cook a hamburger, ground meat.
Yeah, brown
chicken,
okay.
And stuff like that. But I was pushed through the program.
What do you mean by pushed through the program? You lost me there. You mean they did it too fast?
They did it too fast. It was not. They had a set amount of hours that I had to get, and if I got those hours, whether I was finished or not, that was it.
Now, did they have people specifically there to train blind people, or just...
Well, they had, yeah, to a certain extent. They did have a couple of home management teachers there. But like I said, the state, you have to do it in a certain amount of time, and then if you're not finished, and they can only extend it so far, then
Well, they don't do, Georgia doesn't have, what we have in Texas, we have what we call home teachers that come to your house and...
They're just now incorporating those up in this area.
Huh.
Down in South Georgia, if they have home teachers, it was, I think, one of them just did the computer. They had rehab counselors, but they weren't specific for the county. It was like district counselors,
uh-huh.
And you had to go out of the county to get any training. It's a little kind of out in the boondocks, if you want to put it that way.
Yeah.
I used to live out in the boondocks, and then when I moved to Atlanta, it was like, oh, cool, I've got public transportation.
So this is Georgia's answer to home teachers. They send you to this Warm Springs thing.
Then after I got out of there, I went to the Sensory Rehabilitation Center, which it was under the state, and I was still getting very little because it was not a one-on-one thing. It was it was more classes and with more than one student, and
uh-huh.
It was like a team effort. So you really didn't get the one-on-one except for mobility.
Okay.
Which I did get mobility in school, and I did get mobility through the centers and stuff.
Now, but they taught you some mobility at the Georgia Academy for the
Blind.
So you went to Warm Springs, and you went to this other place, and they're
the
trying to teach you.
The center, which closed due to they were going into privatization, which then I went back. Because I still wasn't finished with the training when they closed the center down. I went back there in 98. And I didn't get all the training I needed there because the instructor quit.
You didn't get all the training then. Why? Because too fast, not one-on-one, or what?
It was, now, in 98, it started out as one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
And I started learning some cooking techniques and cleaning techniques and things like that. But then more students came, and they were putting more of us together as a group session. But and then the instructor quit. When it privatized, it went downhill.
So, but have you mastered those skills by now on your own, or can you still...
I'm still working with rehab. Some of the skills, like some of the very basic stuff
mm-hmm.
I've done, but I'm still working with rehab on those.
Okay.
There's still a lot that I need to learn.
So you're still with the Georgia Commission for the Blind or whatever they call
rehabilitation,
Rehabilitation Center. All right, let's take a break, and we want to come back and talk about your book that you have published. I'm Phil Parr. Ann Harrison is our guest. Our show is called Blind Like Me, and we'll be back in just a second. Okay.
Here's a website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Sight, here's Tim Cummings.
For those of you who love old-time radio, you should check out the following website. It's called First Generation Radio Archives. The First Generation Radio Archives is dedicated to finding the original recordings of old-time radio programs and restoring them to pristine condition. They find these old discs, these original recordings, they clean them up, put them onto CD, and they sound awesome. You can go to the website, you can listen to samples, and if you want to purchase some of them, you can do that. And if you want to join and become a member, there's a nominal fee where you get a discount on the CDs, plus there's an email newsletter that you can sign up for. Again, it's called the First Generation Radio Archives. The website address is www.radioarchives.org. I'd give it a screen reader friendliness rating of an 8. And for Blindsights, this is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blindsighting.
If you found a screen reader-friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blindsight.
Hi, everybody. I'm Phil Parr, Ann Harrison. There's our guest from... You did tell me. Canton.
Sorry.
The reason I said not to tell is I should be able to remember that. We have a Canton in Texas, and at Canton, Texas, there's a big flea market that they have every month. And this thing is several acres of things to buy, junk. I think, and that's up north of me in Canton, Texas. Anyway, from Canton, Georgia, and Ann has written a novel published. What is the title of your novel?
It's called The Springville Murders, and it's a Springville High Mystery. For those of you that are kind of like, Springville, I've never heard of that. That's just a fictional town that I've personally made up myself.
Springdale, Springville?
Springville, S-P-R-I-N-G-V-I-L-L-E.
So this is Springville, Georgia?
Actually, I put it in Tennessee.
Springville, Tennessee.
It was weird. Now, I just can't, you know, how sometimes when you're writing like that, you'll come up with some of the oddest things.
Well, I think that's all right to put it in Tennessee. I've got a lot of good friends in Tennessee. Now, you said that you wrote this, you're totally blind and have been all your life, and but you wrote this as a sighted person.
Yeah, and let me explain that. What I mean by that, you know, none of my characters have disabilities.
Okay.
None of them are blind or anything to start with. And then, like, say, details, like, in a character's house or in an office or the courthouse or whatever, I describe it as if, not as if you and I were walking in, but if there are any sighted listeners out there, as those sighted people would walk in and see what's around them. Because I like to read, I picked up on that through a lot of the talking books and books in Braille.
Uh-huh.
How they describe, especially the Sue Grafton books, the Alphabet Mysteries, things like that. I picked up on a lot of that.
M is for murder.
A is for alibi. B is for
And her character is, I can't think of the girl.
Kenzie Milhone.
Kenzie Milhone is single, lives in a little garage apartment, kind of behind this old guy named Henry. Right.
Yeah, but actually, I don't know if you read. I can't remember if it was G is for F. I think it was F where there were a couple of bombs and...
They blew up her apartment.
Yeah, and Henry built her a bigger one.
Yeah, built her a better one.
Yeah,
I like Kenzie Milhone books. She has one dress, owns one dress. She reminds me somewhat of my wife. My wife is a tomboy lady. She isn't real fond of dresses.
I used to be. In school, I used to, and my husband can vouch for this, too, but I used to wear dresses every day, just about it.
Really?
I used to be a real dress. I don't know what word would be. A connoisseur.
That's good.
Of dresses, but now, I cannot stand, I wear skirts, but I cannot stand dresses.
Well, the man doesn't care for pantyhose. That's her,
I don't either. If I gotta wear a dress, it's knee highs or thigh high stockings.
That's her big complaint or her nemesis. Anyway, that neither here nor there. Kenzie reminds me somewhat of of my wife, Kenzie Milholm. So you've read all those books, have you?
Not all of them.
Well, I bet you read
quite a few to read, but I haven't caught up to the latest one. I've gotten this to about O.
Okay, let me rephrase that.
And Q and
let me rephrase that. You've read some of those
most
books.
Most of them.
Most of those books.
Most of them.
Okay. And what other authors do you like?
Mary Higgins Clark.
Do you now?
Yes.
Well,
I've read some of Carol Higgins. Excuse me, Carol Higgins Clark too. But Julie Garwood. Let's see.
What about John D. McDonald? Did you ever read any of his?
No.
Never did?
No. John Saul, Stephen King.
Yeah.
Dean Koontz. I like some Danielle Steele.
Yeah.
I like some romances, but after a while you just get to the point where I had to switch genres. I like Agatha Christie. I've read quite a few of her books.
Now, does your book have a protagonist? In other words, does it have a main character?
Yes.
What is this character's name, this person's name?
Well, I forgot two. Her name is Shelley. I did not use last names unless I honestly had to, because with me being a first-time writer, I was afraid somebody would come back and say, well, you used my last name, blah, 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 blah. And it would be a big legal battle. So until I found out from the copyright office that names are not protected under copyright law.
You can't copyright a name.
No, you can't.
Anyway,
Shelley is the main character.
Shelley, lady named Shelley.
Yep.
Tell us about it.
Actually, it's set kind of in the main character. She's a 10th grader, I think. I'd have to, you know, look at the book, of course, but in high school.
Oh, Shelley is still in high school.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, so she's about 15.
Yeah, she's about 15, 16, something like that.
About 15 or 16 years old. What? Tell us a little about her.
Well, she's not really like a lot of some teenagers you see today, gotta have their mini skirts and stuff. No, she's a jeans-type person. She's about 5'9", blonde hair, blue eyes, that kind of thing. She will wear denim skirts, but she's not a dress type person.
All right.
And she has a best friend who hangs out with her. Her name was Jessica. And Jessica, don't ask me where I got this, unless, you know, because I have family members who are diabetic, but Jessica is a diabetic.
Okay.
But, so, she, you know, if they go out for pizza, she eats pizza every once in a while. But it starts out, and I'll tell you how I got this phrase. It starts out listlessly standing in a mall, and I don't remember every little thing, you know, as far as what I wrote. I'd have to look it up to be exactly sure. But the listlessly standing in a mall, I'll tell you how I got that started. I was listening to the book New Stories from the South, 2001.
Uh-huh.
And in that book, the introduction by Lee Smith, she talks about a student she had that claimed that she couldn't write a story. And Lee Smith asked her, well, what do you remember? And she said she remembered standing in a mall in Fayetteville, North Carolina, with a cigarette in her hand.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't use the cigarette stuff, the cigarette thing, because, you know, I don't smoke, so I just didn't use that. But listlessly standing in a mall, that phrase kind of struck me. And I thought, because I like mysteries, and I'm thinking, I want to write a short story. Well, that's what it started out to be. And then it just grew. My husband kind of helped me a little bit with some of the, he kind of helped me come up with some of the ideas, but not a whole lot. But
now, are you saying listlessly standing in a...
Listlessly. L-I-S-T-L-E-S-S-L-Y.
Listlessly standing in a mall.
Yes.
Is your husband blind or sighted?
He's visually impaired.
Visually impaired, but he does have some vision.
He has some vision, yes. It's gotten progressively worse over the years, but he... How far can you... You can see about 10 feet in front of him. I'm sorry. He's sitting in here with me.
Right. It's there, right. Well, and so Shelley is your protagonist. And
yes.
They say to write about what you know.
Yep.
And so you know a little about diabetes and how it's taken care of.
Yeah, because he's a diabetic.
And so...
And it's the Center for the Visually Impaired where I went before we got married.
Because
I had, gotten out of... I was working for the Gallup organization. Yeah, I know I'm kind of backtracking here. And then I got out of that job because I couldn't... Well, I wasn't making the production. Well, that's a long story, but... Anyway, so, and then I went back to the Center for the Visually Impaired to kind of get some refresher and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, where was it? Center for the Visually Impaired.
You were talking about diabetes and how you know about it.
Sorry about that. Over half of their clientele had diabetes.
Yeah.
So, and that's how I knew. And plus, when I found out my husband was diabetic, I asked the library and got books about diabetes so that I could learn what to do in a situation where his sugar bottoms out or goes too high, or if he gets sick, how to keep it down, how to help him keep it down, stuff like that. I wanted to learn about it. And it's also my grandfather and my grandmother on my mother's side have it, too, and I have an aunt that has it, so...
Well, so one of your characters is diabetic, and so that's something you know about. And they say write about what you know.
Yep.
And
the character who has a diabetic, she's one of the murder victims, but there's like her sister's best friend is like the first victim, shall we say. And then Shelley's, I guess you would say, close friend, boyfriend, his brother is the next body they find. And then, of course, Jessica gets raped and killed.
Jessica is the diabetic girl?
Yes.
Okay.
She, when she runs to the bathroom in the morning and she comes back, she notices something strange. The window's open and these bad guys in high school are... out to get her and her friends and their friend that works at this pizza place, and I can't.
That's all right. We don't need that. Let me ask you this. Now, this I gather from what you said, this all happens in a high school setting. These murders.
But not exactly in the high school itself. But some of the murder victims, their bodies are found in the baseball field behind the high school.
Really?
Yes, and that's where the picture on the cover of the book, the suggestion for that came from.
A baseball field?
Yeah, in the high. It's got a high school in the background, and in the baseball field that's kind of in the foreground... There's a body of a kid's body in the baseball field, but you can't tell who the kid is. But and then it's like in the mountains, and with it's kind of a cloudy day.
Okay, do you have this? You say this book is only in print
right
it's
now?
Only,
yes,
not even in large type print, but just
in 12-point.
12-point print.
I want to try to get it in large print, but I don't know how I could go about getting it in large print.
Now, you say this is a publisher on demand. In other words, you had to pay them to publish your book.
They did the main, as they call it, teching of the book. They put it together in the printed format. Perfect bound format with the ISBN and everything.
All right.
Of course, I had to pay out a bit of money to do that. And then they worked with me to the best of their ability to make sure that it was exactly the way I want.
All right.
And everything. And not to make anybody think, oh, no, this is not good or anything. But I just want to let you know, when you get the book... those that can read the regular print, ignore the little typos. But there are a couple of people have pointed out a couple of typos, but there's not that many. So just
you'd think the publisher would have caught that, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but see, they're print on demand, and they don't really, they don't have, unless I get copy editing, which is expensive.
Mm-hmm.
It's like almost 2 cents a word, 1.5 cents a word.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
And with a 64,000 some odd word book, that can get expensive.
It could get expensive. Okay, so they printed, they have a printing facility at this place? Do they?
They use Lightning Source.
And so they printed how many copies of the book?
Well, it's, you can still get it. When you order it, they print, like, say, a bookstore, or if you get it off the web or something like that, they can send it to the printer. The printer prints out a copy in 3 days. You get the book in 3 to 5 business days.
A hardcover or a soft cover?
Soft cover.
Soft cover book.
Yeah.
You say get it off the web. How would you do that?
You can go to authorhouse.com.
Go to what now?
Authorhouse.com.
Authorhouse.com.
Yes. Or go to the bookstore. Personally, I would do a search by title.
Okay.
It's just easier. Or you can get it off of Amazon.com.
Oh, Amazon has your book.
Amazon, BarnesandNoble.com, Borders, which a lot of those are branched off of Amazon.com. Walmart.com. There's like 25,000 retailers worldwide.
Now, this book is called The
Springville
Murders. Do you have this in text form on your computer?
Yes, I have it on a disk.
On a disk, MP3 compressed? Or
no, on floppy.
You have it on
3.5-inch floppy.
As a text file?
Yes, as a Word document.
As a Word document. So if I had that, a copy of that floppy, I could put it in my computer and read it with synthesized speech?
Yes.
Or I could move it to Bookport, if I had a Bookport.
Bookport?
And, yes. You're not familiar with Bookport?
No.
Bookport is actually a reader for blind people that has a synthesized speech engine in it. It records on a card. It's a little pocket-sized thing that you put in your pocket. And you can download books from Audible, or you can any text file it will read for you. So if you had a Bookport or a Book Courier is the other one. Bookport is sold by the printing house. I don't know who sells Book Courier, but I have a Bookport.
I've never even heard of that.
A Bookport.
And I bet that the equipment like that's expensive.
It is too expensive. It's $400-something, Bookport one. But you don't have a way of selling the book as a text file. In other words, if a totally blind person wanted to order it.
I could sell it personally. Can you send discs like that free matter?
Sure. What are they going to do? Look in the envelope? See what you sent? Huh?
From what I've heard, sometimes they do.
No, they don't.
They don't?
They don't care. Why would they care? Well, the postal inspectors are going to say, all right, you're sending material that's not for blind people. We're going to put you under, you know, what are they going to do? They don't care. This is matter for the blind. This thing the post office does, this is reading matter for the blind. So you could make me a copy of the floppy, put it in an envelope, put free matter for the blind, and put my address on it, and I could read it. Or
yes.
you could sell them like that.
Yeah.
But you're not set up to do that yet.
I can do that, but I wanted to do that. I didn't know if there was like going to be like a big need for that. But if there is, yes, I can do that. And if you want, I can even put Braille labels on it.
Well, if you want blind people to read your book, you're either going to have it in Braille, or we're going to have somebody read the book.
Onto a tape.
You've got to do one of two things if you want blind people to read your book. Because other than buying a copy and scanning it into my scanner,
that would take too long. If people are computer savvy and want to buy it on this disk, that's fine too. All I have to do is copy it and then I'd send it to you. I sell the printed, well, locally because I don't know about the shipping and stuff for the printed. I usually sell them for $15. How do you autograph a disc?
Well, I don't know. Assuming that maybe autographs wouldn't mean that much to a blind person, we know that you personally made the disc.
Yeah.
So it looks like that would be a fairly easy way if you have it in.
You know, you just came up with a good idea. I've got to. That's something that I can definitely do that.
You know, occasionally I'll come up with a good idea. It's not too often, but every once in a while I'll stumble around and actually come up with a good idea. But if
we talked yesterday, the home readers. You came up with a good idea there.
Home readers would read it for you. I don't know what they'd charge you or if they'd charge you. But home readers would read it, and once you got it read, making copies of it would be no problem. I think home readers, I don't know if they put things on CD now, but surely they do. Surely they're away from cassettes.
I know they used to do cassettes back a couple of years ago when we would get the Swans stuff.
Yeah, Swans. You know, Swans does the catalog themselves now.
I didn't know they did
it. Yeah, you can order it directly from Schwann's. It's not very, the quality isn't very good, and the girl who reads it isn't very good. But yeah, you can get the Schwann's. I get a couple of months.
Delivery service is really we kind of closed out our service with them because their delivery was not good. They lost their good drivers, and then for other reasons, and the driver that was supposed to deliver them at the time we scheduled, he hadn't made deliveries all day. So we said, no, that's not going to work. I like Schwann's, but their delivery service just wasn't the best in the world up here.
All right, let's get back to your book. You can it's called, that's all right, it's called Springville Murders. Can be bought through Amazon.
Yep.
Can be bought through Borders Books.
Yeah, Borders. The website, I can't get it into the, like I was explaining yesterday, it's hard to get it into the corporate bookstores themselves.
You mean the bricks and mortar bookstores?
Yeah, bricks and mortar, because it has to be returnable, and they don't usually do a lot of print on demand, but they will order it if you request it. They will order, if people request it, and they know about it, they will order them all day long.
All right.
But yet they won't put it on the shelves. But yet I call these independent small bookstore chains, and a lot of them will, some of them won't, because if they don't work with Ingram or Ingram's database, or the publisher themselves, if they work with like Baker & Taylor or another company, they won't get it because Baker & Taylor doesn't have it. It's through Ingram's database. But a lot of, like, grocery stores and things like that, you have to go through news groups, the news group, or, like, Anderson News magazine companies. And I've talked to Author House about that, but the problem is they want a 55% discount or better.
Well, everybody's got Amazon. Everybody knows how to get to Amazon, so that would be the easiest way to order. Let's wrap this up and get an email address, or if you want to give a phone number, contact information for you, and maybe you can work out something where you can sell these on disc and send them. There's no problem with sending them free matter. What is your? Do you want to give an email address or a phone number?
I'm
going to
give you the email address for the book because my pen name is the initial J, and I'll explain that in a minute. Ann Harrison. My email address is the JANNHARRISON@bellsouth.net. That's the email I use for the book. Phone number is 678-393-1874. And if I'm not home or can't get to the phone or whatever, anything regarding in the book, because we've got sub-mail boxes, just leave a message in box 2.
All right, box 2.
Yep.
And you'll know that it's concerning the book, and maybe you can sell some books.
I can sell it on disc.
The Springville Murders, author Ann Harrison, totally blind, available through Amazon, or you can call the phone number. Give me the phone number one more time.
678-393 1874. Now, if you email me, the only thing I suggest is that you leave a contact number so that I can get back in touch with you so that we can talk about, you know, getting it on disc. That way, instead of, like, trying to do emails back and forth, that way I can talk to the person, you know, personally instead of I just hope that makes sense to people. Please leave me a contact number so I can call back so we can discuss it.
JannHarrison@BellSouth.net. Is that correct?
Yes.
Our guest has been Ann Harrison. Thank you much, and we'll look forward to getting a copy of the book.
Okie dokie. And I've got a couple more that I'm trying to get. I've got to do the finishing touches on them, and I still got to get those published as well.
Oh, you've got more books.
I've got more books written.
Yeah. Well, let's concentrate on this one, the spring
That's
bill.
Fine. I'm just letting you know, just for interest's sake. I haven't stopped. I'm still writing. the Springville murders. And it's on disc. I sell it on disc. As well as it's sold in print on Amazon. I'm sorry, I'm taking your... stealing your thunder here. Go ahead, Phil.
I'm just waiting on you. We'll be back in just a minute with more Blind Like Me. Hang on.
BlindLikeMe-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's BlindLikeMe-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
Okay, I love being on the Blind Like Me list because I'm the moderator and I get to delete people if I want to.
If you enjoy chatting with other blind folks, come join us on the Blind Like Me list. Send a blank email to BlindLikeMe-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
I see that we have a little time here. I know that some of you out there were saying, gosh, Phil, no one enjoys a good interview more than I do, but I wish you'd play a little more music that you've personally recorded. I could just feel it. I mean, just the sensation coming through my radio, but very much like listening to Oral Roberts preach or something. I don't know exactly what he was. Anyway, hello there. We have a little time left, and I don't have anything to put here, so I thought, golly, I'll just, what is that buzz? Let me see what it is. Well, we figured that out, I think. Anyway, I play a little music to just sort of round out today's show. I guess I'm going to have to go ahead and finish the novel I've started now, since we have a blind lady's published book. I'm sure there are others. In fact, I think we've interviewed a couple others that have books. I've spoken to that fellow in San Antonio, Larry Johnson, who wrote the book about Mexico. I meant to read that, about his trip to Mexico, living in Mexico. That was, good heavens, that was a year or so ago. I meant to order that book and never did. Maybe some of you have read it. Anyway, let me play this little tune for you. Merle Haggard wrote and recorded this tune. We did it a little bit different. Merle had it out in, I guess, back in the 70s. You may remember it. It's called The Silver Wings. Wait a minute. Hold it. That's not right. Here's Silver Wings. Let's see. Here we go. This is Silver Wings, all right? Okie dokie, as Aaron Brown on CNN would say. I love Aaron Brown. He's, I think he's a great, great news reporter. News Night on CNN. I really enjoy that show. Anyway, thank you for coming to be with us on Blind Like Me again. I think this is show number 92. So we're fast approaching the 100 mark, and we certainly have not interviewed all the blind folks that we want to, told all the stories that we have to tell. So if you have a story, whether you were a skydiver or have a wonder, some sort of a different life or different occupation, what we look for is people who are handling blindness and doing it well to prove to those folks who have recently lost their eyesight that it isn't the end of the world. It can be done. It's an inconvenience, but it can certainly be handled. It's something you can handle if you're blind, newly blinded, or losing your eyesight. Let us know. Phil@philpar.net. Phil@philpar.net. That'll get you in hold of me, or 936-634-9500. Thanks for listening. Come be a guest on the show if you haven't been, or even if you have been, give us a call. Maybe we'll do you again. Thanks much. Talk to you later. I'm Phil Parr. Bye-bye. Thanks for listening.